Love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening, and enjoy.
Let's slate for scenes of marriage.
1, 2, 3.
All right. How are the volumes?
Level sound good.
Let's start recording in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hey, Rolando.
Hey, Nicole.
How familiar are you with Ingmar Bergman?
I think you and I both know the answer to that is nil.
Not Ingrid Bergman, Ingmar Bergman.
Who the hell's Ingmar Bergman?
He's a filmmaker.
Oh, the guy who did the movie, the shows we're talking about.
Yes, yes, he is the original.
I know him by name, and you could probably assume that I maybe have seen Through a Glass Darkly.
Oh, you! Wow, out of all these films, that's the film you've seen.
Let me assess that. I have seen scenes from Us, Glass Darkly, and had to read about it in college, but outside of that.
Okay.
Oh, and obviously, Marriage Story, because we had to do this for film.
Not Marriage Story is a Noah Baumbach film that came out 2 years ago. This is Scenes from a Marriage.
I mean, they're basically the same movie, right? It's about the
disillusion
of a marriage.
You know, this is a great segue, actually, into the next part of the show after the cold open, when I talk about how influential Ingmar Bergman's films are. So we're talking about Scenes from a Marriage, the original miniseries that debuted on Swedish television by Ingmar Bergman, and the new remake on HBO Max in 2021. I'm Nicole. What?
It was HBO. It's an HBO series, not an HBO Max. There's a difference.
Oh, okay.
You can stream it on HBO Max. No, it's like a big difference. HBO Max, like Gossip Girl's HBO Max, right? That's like kind of...
There is a big difference. I apologize. I'm sorry to anyone who I may have offended. I am Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality. I was just talking to Rolando the other day how I felt that a lot of our recent episodes were focused like on things that like junior millennials grew up on and like things that are targeted more to younger audiences. Mm-hmm. So I think today will be a nice breath of fresh air as we probably dissect one of the most adult things we'll ever talk about on this podcast.
Are you forgetting that we have talked about... Shit, I should have had a joke ready for this one.
Well, I said one of the... I didn't say the only one, but...
The
yes,
Rugrats. Which is about having children.
Well, this is also going to be one of our most, quote, art housey episodes ever.
Okay. That's true.
You know, because, I mean, you know, I'm actually a big fan of films that are labeled as art house, even though to me, I don't know why it's art house. It's just... All movies.
It's just a foreign film.
It's a foreign film. Technically a miniseries.
That was condensed to a film.
A lot of people like to label things that they don't understand as well as they do a film with a clear plot, you know, that has a beginning, middle, and end. They like to label it as art house or just art in general, an art film. Or like people sometimes will be like, well, what the hell was the point of that? You know, there was no clear meaning from it. And actually, those are films I kind of like more because I don't like being told so much as what to take from films. I like actually pondering, you know, well, what was the meaning of that? And films that are more atmospheric than plot driven. And I think that one of the best filmmakers at that and one of the most when you talk about cliche, quote, our house cinema, the one that comes to mind is mostly Ingmar Bergman films. Ingmar Bergman's a Swedish filmmaker, and he was active for many years, from the late 40s into the early 80s. I mean, his career spanned a long time, and he was churning out movies almost every year, especially in the 50s and stuff.
Yeah.
He's actually, one of his films, The Seventh Seal, is kind of like that cliche joke that people make about art cinema, where it's that guy, it's the crusade knight who's playing chess with death on the beach.
Oh, I'm familiar with that one, actually. Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people always make fun of that and stuff, which is interesting because The Seventh Seal is a really short and entertaining movie, but it always gets like labeled as this complex, hard-to-watch art film, which I actually disagree with. I think it's really fastly paced and a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it.
I've seen it through the eyes of Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, okay. When did they reference it?
When the filmmaker guy that they know wanted to make a short movie, so it was him playing. I think he was eating a burger with death at Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, it's always the joke that when someone wants to be profound, they kind of bring up Ingmar Bergman and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I actually think that there is a lot of profound works that Ingmar Bergman has done. Some of his other films, Wild Strawberries, you know, which is about an older man looking back on his life through a glass darkly.
It takes place in a cottage or something, right? Like someone had just left the loony bin.
Yeah, kind of. It's actually about a schizophrenic woman, you know, with her family on a remote island. And she's like, and it's just kind of like having illusions and all this stuff.
I phrase that in the most offensive way possible. Sorry, guy.
Somewhere in the mid-60s, around the time when he made a film called Persona, he kind of shifted from, you know, really straightforward stories to more abstract cinema, Persona being the most famous one. And that's like a film that usually gets made fun of too in terms of art house cinema.
Yeah. The reason this director particularly came up was because I took a class called Film as Intercultural Communication and stuff. And like he shows up like, I don't know, I guess it's because it's a foreign film. But, you know, what can we Americans take from cinema that it is not American? You know what I mean? And
no, yeah,
I think the reason
definitely.
Marriage Story comes up is because it's just like, well, let's look at this film. I'm going to keep making that mistake. A Scene from a Marriage comes up is because is this a accurate portrayal of just Western culture in general, just in Swiss?
That's a good question, definitely, when we start talking about Scenes from a Marriage. I'm not quite done with Ingmar Bergman yet, though.
Yeah, I was just telling you Ingmar Bergman.
I think he's, you know, Woody Allen, who's very highly influenced by Ingmar Bergman. You could kind of see that all over his films, you know, whether or not you like him as a, you know, person or not. That's simple. That's his biggest influence. And Ingmar Bergman, I think, is one of those people who you could stick him in a room and like he won't be part of society and socialize with anyone. And yet he'll still be able to make the films that he makes. Right. If you kind of like even cast him away from society, because he's someone who just can come up with these things from his own brain.
Right.
And I think that he can kind of bring his commentary into any time period that he exists. When I butchered that quote, but he's made so many interesting films. Cries and Whispers, the film he made right before Scenes from a Marriage, is just so intriguing. It's so visually stunning, too. It's about three sisters who live together, and he uses red and colors so strikingly in that film. So, like I said, he was a filmmaker that was active from the late 40s, well into the 80s, and around 1973, he was offered the chance to make a television series, and he made a 6-part miniseries with his then frequent collaborator / lover, Liv Ullmann, and another one of his most frequent collaborators, Erland Josephson.
Yeah, wasn't he was in post-production for whatever movie came out beforehand, right?
Cries and Whispers, yes.
Yeah, so that was in post-production. It was taking so long, and this movie was like a third of the budget. This project was a third of the project, like a third of the budget.
Yeah.
And you see it from like kind of the stripped away filmmaking, but it works, I think.
And it was also kind of like less painless, you know, less cast and crew. It was just like his go-tos that he could rely on. And yeah, and this is what they came up with. And it does work, I agree. Scene from a Marriage, 6-part miniseries, Swedish television, written and directed by Ingmar Bergman, although the two actors did contribute to it greatly. And I think his life and their lives really helped create the inspiration for these characters of Johan, who's a professor of psychology, and his wife, Marianne, played by Liv Ullmann, who she's a divorce counselor, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Anyway. yeah. And then the film, they turned into a film. They condensed it into a little less than 3-hour film, you know, and it played internationally and all this stuff. This was so successful and so lauded in Sweden when it came out that they actually blamed this film for the rising rates in divorce that was happening in Europe.
They did, yes.
And it was very controversial for that. They were like, oh my God, this film, this miniseries, I keep saying film, I'm sorry. You know, it's perpetuating and it's giving divorce a good reputation. You know, they blamed it. They always unfairly blame art. Yeah, but, you know, hey, art imitates life.
But there was also a rise in marriage counseling, though, as a result of this movie, too.
There was, yeah. So yeah. I also kind of want to put us in the mindset of 1973, especially as Americans, because we can speak to that very well. Mm-hmm. But, there, you know, when you think about films that came out in the 60s, 50s, and even in the 70s, when we think about 70s cinema, we think about The Godfather, French Connection, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Rocky. Right? Mm-hmm. None of these films are really talking about things like marriage and like familial relationships.
What do you talk about? The Godfather is all about a mafia family.
It's more about Michael than it is about his relationships. I mean, now, of course, his relationships are shown, but it's more about the kind of the demise of Michael as a person. And it's more focused on Michael than anything, right? It's not really focused on Kay. She's just part of it. But later on in the 70s, around 1979, and even probably we'll start with, like, say, Woody Allen's Annie Hall in 1977. Then in 1979, you get Kramer versus Kramer. You get in 1980, Ordinary People. 1983, Terms of Endearment. Suddenly, there's this huge focus on films about family dynamics and relationships, right? Kramer versus Kramer being a great example of it. And that film, like, when that came out, you know, won the Oscar. People went apeshit for it. I do think that Scenes from a Marriage is why this happened, because this was the first time a film kind of made an intellectual piece about what it is to be married, what it is to, you know, have something that was once great and when it is falling apart and all the complexities with it. Now, in 2021, it seems so been there, done that, right? But 1973, this was not something that was typical. And because of it, I think, is why, especially in the 80s, we got so many of these films. Because they realized that we should actually be making films about this. People can relate to it. People need to see that. Which is why Company, the Broadway musical that happened in 1970, was also so important for Broadway, right? So I think things like this, we kind of take them for granted how important they were in their day.
What do you think they needed to see? Like, you just said, it's like people needed to see that. What?
A mirror reflection, right?
Of what?
So, of their life. But there's nothing in Scenes from a Marriage that you can't relate to or you can relate to?
I mean, so, obviously, no. Actually, from both of these, I could say, like, not really that much. But
Eddie, is there anything in Scenes from a Marriage that you can relate to?
No.
No, I don't.
No. All right, so...
Well, hang on. Let me put it to you. Let me put it, I guess, this way, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because I think while it is okay for a film to make a dramatization of the dissolution of a marriage, how it dissolves, how it just falls apart, that's fine. But, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if, like, this whole idea of, like, a mirror to society is really accurate, because I know, like, this is, like, this idea that, like, 50% of all marriages end in divorce, and that's just, like, that's not true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I'm sorry if, like, I implied that it was a mirror to all of society.
No, I guess, but I guess it's just, like, I guess maybe I take... Not offense, but, like, it's just like you say, we needed this. It's just like, we didn't need this. Like, I don't know if we needed this.
So I'm going to disagree with you. You yourself might not need this. And you're also talking about someone who, I'm going to give a little personal information out to our audience here, but, you know, Rolando has had one major successful relationship in his life. So he doesn't really know what it's like to have a relationship fall apart. And
this is
beautiful.
This is true, yeah. But I guess... All right, so go on. This is fair. I mean, yeah, that's fair. I haven't had to go through a breakup.
So also, we're in a day and age, too, where things like therapy are more applauded. Things like actually talking about things and are not just, like, hidden under the rug. You know, having, like, your problems, like the fact that you can be open about the fact that, oh, we're having issues in our relationship. You know, this is a different era when relationships, everything was supposed to seem perfect and everyone was supposed to live happily ever after.
Right.
So for a film to actually show how things really are behind closed doors, and for people to relate to, more so than I probably could relate to a film like Rocky or One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I'm, you know, using American examples here because, mm-hmm. you know, we're American. I think Scenes from a Marriage shows, like, oh, hey, things are imperfect. And it's actually more common than people might have thought back then. And I think that was something that, and all, you know, not all films have to be mirror reflections. I think that's what also is kind of like one of the key differences between, say, art films and escapist films is that escapist, you know, entertaining films, that's what it does. Art right. films make you think and they show you something about your own life, usually in mm-hmm. little ways, but in some way. So I think that people didn't really have that in 1973. We have it so much now. And maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's like you not being able to relate or like having this oversaturated market of it now, but that's why I'm just convinced that in 1973, that's why I think it was needed for people.
I mean, for me, it's both, but I guess, yes, in you're right. For the time period back then, yes, it was needed and stuff, fine. If we haven't seen anything like it before, that checks out. That's true, right? I was more reacting already to like the current marriage Scenes of a Marriage,
like, yeah, and that's one, the thing, right? Yeah, so, and you're also probably thinking about Marriage Story and other films that, you know, we've
Revolutionary
seen.
Road, literally any first year acting you class,
yeah, you know? There you go. I mean, you know, just to put into perspective too, some of the films that came out in this country in 1973, The Exorcist.
I mean, but we all needed that.
Well, yeah, like, we so needed that.
I mean, yeah, like exorcisms are real, guys.
Yeah. The Sting, American Graffiti, Live and Let Die, which is a James Bond movie. Uh-huh. Now, I would say probably the best example I could put from Scenes to a Marriage would be a film called The Way We Were with Barbara Streisand and Robert Redford about a relationship that disintegrated, but that was more sentimentalized, mm-hmm. whereas Scenes from a Marriage was almost so painfully raw and like just really kind of put all of that dirty laundry out there, and it was flawed and it felt more real. So anyway, okay. Yeah. So just to put that in perspective, and like I said, and then a couple of years later, Kramer versus Kramer wins the best picture. So,
now were a lot of Americans watching foreign films though?
Actually, even if they weren't watching it, they were aware of it, right? Ingmar Bergman at one point was a pretty household name, and I do think that that's why, at least now for millennials, we at least are familiar with his work, maybe not his actual name.
Mm-hmm.
And foreign films, you know, when really you had TV and your options on TV were limited, and then you went to the movies and that was your only form of entertainment. You know, if you wanted to be challenged or wanted to see something else that was going on, you usually saw foreign films.
Interesting. I guess maybe I'm just wondering, is it like how many Americans wanted to be challenged?
This is a great question.
And you know, like, because I think that's still pretty apropos to ask.
Although
even in 2021.
I think that we shouldn't, you know, undermine people. And what people are seeking, you know, like we shouldn't assume. I want to give more credit to people. I want to give more people to.
I'm asking questions.
No, I'm not saying that to you. I'm saying that in general.
But I'm also making assumptions here that, like, you know, most Americans don't want to be challenged. Most Americans don't want to be questioned. No, don't want to question.
Maybe you know. In 2021, but maybe not in 1973.
I don't know. I think it's always been an American thing.
I mean, this was
thing.
The Watergate, Vietnam era. People were more open then. This is an era where foreign films were cool. Like going to the theater and watching non-American Hollywood shit was the cool thing to do.
Well, cool to who? Because that was called? Like being
whoever
anti-war
gets labeled as cool.
Because being anti-war was counterculture, though.
And counterculture at this time was cool.
So a counterculture. I don't know if it was cool. The reason it's called counterculture is because...
No, counterculture was what people...
The norm.
So I mean, that's the thing. I read a lot of 60s and 70s books and watch a lot of these films. And like people who were part of... That's why the counterculture came crashing down so severely in the 70s because it had almost too much power. And then the 80s, we just took a complete conservative right turn. Mm-hmm. But in the 60s and 70s, counterculture was so huge to the point where like... A lot of people who were prominent in the counterculture were either killed or on the FBI's most wanted list. So
okay.
It had such weight to it. So
All right.
So, but let's talk now about the actual scenes of scenes from A Marriage. I actually have been saying Scenes of a Marriage, but it's
so have
from
I.
A Marriage.
So have I.
Well, you've been saying Marriage Story.
Both. When I was talking to, when I was Googling it to do my research, I was like, Scenes of a Marriage, Scenes of a Marriage. I also Googled, in my Google history, you will find Scenes of a Marriage, The Office Dinner Party, because in the second episode, no, in the first episode, the dinner party, where they have friends over, there's like a fight between the other couple that's so like just raw and just like it's so cringy. And it reminded me so much of The Office, an episode where Michael Scott and Jan have a dinner party and like how they just hate each other and it's just coming out at this dinner party and how awkward it is for people. I'm just like, oh, I wonder if they were influenced in any way by Scenes from a Marriage.
I think so. Maybe they didn't even know that they were influenced by it. But this opened the doors to stuff like that. So Scenes from a Marriage, 6 episodes long. When we first begin it, in the first episode, in Innocence and Panic, affluent couple Marianne and Johan are sitting down for an interview about it for a magazine that's about, you know, pretty much their relationship after their 10th anniversary of being married. That's how we meet them.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect way for us to learn about this couple as they're literally telling an interviewer their love story. It was a great way to begin it.
Was it? Because she seems so uncomfortable.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's unhappy in her relationship.
Oh.
And she's talking about her love.
Yeah.
And she's putting on an image. So, yeah, I think that was good acting on Liv Ullmann's part then.
Oh, fair. Yeah.
And then so much happens. And by the end of the episode, they have been divorced. It's been years. It's about 10 years. And they're actually... Do you want a spoiler? Because you're watching the HBO one, so I'm going to spoil
it. Whoa, wait. Not the end of the episode, the end of the series.
I'm talking about the series now. Yeah, I was
the end of the episode was not that...
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking. I'm talking series wise.
I mean, I had to do research for this, so I know where the story goes.
Oh, you know where it goes. Right,
yeah,
okay.
it's pretty obvious. Like,
yeah, I mean, major spoilers, but so much happens, and this chronicles over 10 years of their lives from when they were sitting down to this interview about their marriage to them divorcing, having affairs, having abortion. Which is a terrible, heartbreaking thing for anyone to go through. And then for them to meet again and have a love affair once again, you know, and it's like, so it's about how people are emotionally tied to one another, you know, and even though sometimes you might want to break free, sometimes you feel yourselves pulling back and how, you know, relationships, they're messy, they're confusing, they're all over the place.
Right.
So that's kind of what this is really all about over the course of these 6 episodes. And you really get, like I said, a really raw portrait of these people. It's really dialogue-based. A lot of, you know, just the camera just sits there and lets these actors do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really candid portrait of a relationship. and that's why I said, to me, it was relatable because I've gone through breakups before. I've had my heart broken before. And I think anytime I can almost feel, I mean... I'm joking, half joking when I say like triggered. I think that that is something that I'm like, oh, wow, you're making me, you know, think about my own life. And I happen to like films that provide me with a mirror and have something unique to say, too, about my own life. So Johan, as a character, he's very typical. You know, he's got his typical man
bravado.
Stereotypical male bravado. You know, he's kind of somewhat dismissive of his wife. He's the one who ends up cheating on her. He is the one who, you know, is more leaning towards having the abortion. And he, even to the point, like, there's this one moment in one of the episodes where she, like, drives with him to work and he's so upset because his routine was thrown off. You know, he's almost like he's the dictator in the relationship. He has more control.
Right. He was like, I mean... From the first interview that we see, he's kind of the one who... He finishes her sentences almost, right? Like, he's just, like, assumes that he knows what she's going to say.
And then Marianne, you know, she's quieter.
But Johan wanted her to get the abortion? I don't remember that now.
I feel like he pushed more for it. I mean, they both kind of...
Yeah, that's the thing. I actually thought the abortion... We talked a little bit about this yesterday when we're filming your show, and I was kind of saying, it's just like, I don't know, like the abortion thing seemed like, well, it was a big moment, I guess, for the relationship, but like, it seemed like a decision that came together in both versions of this, right? And I think, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, all right. And keep in mind, we're watching this in 2021, where right now abortion is just a very, very hot topic issue, right? With like abortion rights being stripped away in Texas. Like this, and no, I guess, and this is, was abortion even legal in the U.S. yet? Like what was going on in the U.S.? When was Roe v. Wade? Because this is a very candid discussion about aborting this fetus.
This is amazing. It happened in 1973.
So this is that year. This is that year. Okay. So, wow, crazy. And, I don't know. Maybe I understand that, like, and I can never experience, obviously, what a woman is going through her mind when she's going through this like procedure and like this moment. But on some level, there is kind of like they made this decision together and it was the right decision at the time for the family. Because she already had 3 kids and I think 1 miscarriage, right? At that point?
Yeah, she had said that she had all these children in her life, 1 who died and she has 2 that survived, 1 who died and 1 she will be killing, she says. She puts it like that, you know, because it,
which is not obviously that's not my views on what abortion is, but like, hey, whatever, to each their own. And like, but they came to this decision together, I think, as a couple, right? Which I thought was kind of sweet.
Yeah, and you said it earlier too that in both versions they kind of come to the decision together, but you know, with nuances in the performances, I do think that in both cases, in both versions, there's one partner who kind of does it because the other one seems to be more dedicated to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or more like they want it more than the other one does. So, you know, that happens sometimes when you see your partner really wants something. Sometimes a person, you know, is like, all right, I want it too, even though they don't.
I mean, Johan took it all with like a stride. Like it was just like, okay, cool. What do you want to do? And
yeah, he was almost like,
but she was
cool
one who said, she was one who said abortion first, though.
I think to please him. I mean, this is also what I get from the performances, you know?
Okay.
Because also in this one, Johan's the one who gets checked out first. He's the one who, like I said, he leaves her, he has an affair. And even though she's unhappy, she's more willing to work on things and to stay than he is. Mm-hmm. So for him, he's just like, ugh, no, not another child. And it's almost like an object for him. That's why I feel like he's more, you know,
checked out. That actually tracks actually now in retrospect, because he's the one who's kind of bringing up all the shitty things about having a baby again. So,
yes.
All right, fine.
Exactly. See? So, and that's the thing. That's what's also works, I think, so well about Scenes from a Marriage is that, you know, there's what's on the surface and then what's underneath it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's why I also look at it as a mirror reflection, because I've seen myself in that where I'm like, oh, wow, I've done that. I've said things that I didn't really mean before. I've projected onto my partner before. I've acted in that way before, blah, blah, blah. And that's just, you know, for me, always trying to be the best version of myself. I love when movies and when good works of art do that, you know, when it, you almost see the flaws within yourself through these characters. So that's what I think works so well about this.
That's interesting. And you like that in movies?
Well, I do, because I think growth and self-awareness is an important thing.
I don't know if I like that. I mean, I watch it in movies, but I guess.
Yuck.
Yeah, no, not yuck. Like, it's more like, go read a book for that, I guess.
No, I mean,
like for me,
if
for
that's
me,
how you feel, yeah, that's
like
great.
That's how I feel.
I think that all works of art should provide you with options, right? So if you're gonna, if you're in the mood to just escape and have fun, mm-hmm. by all means, watch something that does that. But if you're looking to be challenged, and I think sometimes people actually need to access things like that through mm-hmm. art, right? Therapy and stuff might be too scary for people. So I think seeing a film that challenges you and brings that out within you, I think is a really beautiful way for people to access that emotions and those feelings within themselves. And I'm a big proponent of also just kind of reaching that higher level of awareness.
Mm.
But, you know, a lot of people think ignorance is bliss. And hey, if you're one of those people, just as long as you're not hurting anyone.
Am I one of those people?
As long as, you know, you're like, not in self-denial.
Am I the drama? All right, yeah, so back to the marriage scenes. So this, so she ends up having the abortion.
He says he's in love with a woman named Paula after some time after the abortion. We never see her, but he's pretty much like,
she's like Maris.
Want a separation. She's Frasier. Like Maris from Frasier, yes.
Yeah,
and he's like, yeah, I'm in love with this girl. She's Paula. I'm going to leave you for many, many months, and you just have to deal with it because this is something that I've wanted. So peace out.
Man, how infuriating is that, right? Like, it's just like, you've been cheating on me and you're just going to leave me. Like,
yeah,
you're like, just leaving.
Like I said, really flawed, accurate portrayals of how people act.
Well, it's, I don't know so how shitty. Accurate.
People do that.
No one goes and says, I'm leaving. They just do it. I think the telling you is the worst part. Just do it. Pull that Band-Aid off.
I think for you to say no one does that is a huge statement.
Fine, but like to say that like a lot of people do, I think is like an overstatement.
I mean,
it's a dramatization.
Maybe I'm saying overstatement, but I mean, that's pretty shitty if you're not going to at least say, hey, I'm leaving you, and you just do it. I mean, that's even shittier to just
leave
you.
That is even shittier, but I feel like that's probably the more common thing that happens. We all heard the story, right? Like, he went out to get cigarettes, and he never came back.
Yeah. Well, hey, it wouldn't make for good drama if that happened. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that people, like, having the rug just kind of taken from under you is something that we've all kind of had happen in our lives in one way or another, whether it's a loss of any kind. Mm-hmm. So, that I also felt was relatable. So I'm just going to do a check mark of all the relatable things in this to show you, Rolando, just how relatable this is.
Right.
But yeah. And then, later on, he says that he's leaving the country. He's going to go teach in Cleveland University.
And I wonder why they picked Cleveland.
I know, right? Just the most random American university.
It's just a Cleveland. Was it Cleveland? Maybe it was Cleveland, like, what would become Cleveland Clinic. Oh, wait, yeah, because he's a psychiatrist.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Cleveland Clinic is, like, one of America's, like, famous hospitals.
There you go. They did their research.
There you go. Yeah, I guess they did.
That point, Marianne is ready to move on, and she's, found a new lover, and then... Yeah, and then they get divorced, and then, their relationship gets even more complicated, and he gets jealous, and he doesn't even want to divorce her because she's moved on and she's happy, and then after years of not seeing each other, they have an affair, right? So it's this whole just shit show, because that's what relationships are at the end of the day, a shit show of emotions.
I mean, I think that's how, like, Sex and the City relationships are.
Yeah, I mean, some relationships are perfectly fine.
Oh, you know what? It's so interesting. I guess I was going to say it's just like, how many divorces end up with like them having affairs back again, or not affairs, but like getting back together or stuff. And like,
right?
I guess I have one. I do personally have one experience of a couple that got a divorce, remarried, had separate lives, and then somehow ended up back together. But like, I mean, I just think it's so expensive. Like, why bother?
Yeah, I wonder if it's more common for when people, after being together for a long period of time, when they break up, do they really just stop feeling for each other? I wonder. Like, and then do they move on and that's it? They never even explore, hey, let's revisit this thing that we once had. Because
to me,
it makes sense. When you spend so much time with someone, you might want to revisit it.
Well, I don't know. I was going to say it's like the opposite of hate. The opposite of love isn't hate. It's
indifference.
Indifference.
Yes.
And like, but we were getting indifference already in episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Their lack of sex life and stuff, and he wasn't really there for her and stuff. Like, he was already indifferent. So he just never, I don't know.
True, but people are complicated. People can fall in and out of love. People could feel a wild range of emotions. And that's another, thing that I like about this in general, too, is that it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, we're talking about it. Like, does this really happen? But people don't really make sense. So
yeah, Marianne also went to therapy.
She did, yeah,
and
proved to be great for her. Look at that; she came out a new woman.
I mean, was that scandalous back then in the '70s? Like, a woman talking about her feelings? What's new?
Yeah, so
come on.
Back in this, I mean, everything about this film just wasn't common. People talking like about. Roe v. Wade happened in 1973, right? This portrayed it as like, hey, abortions actually happen, right? You never really saw that in a film before. It was always hinted at. You didn't really show it as rawly. I can't really say it's never been shown before, but, it didn't happen as much.
I mean, I know that like in Europe, abortion isn't the hot topic issue that it is
over here. Yeah.
It's actually the hot topic issue that the Catholic Church is like up in arms about over there is actually, I think, and someone could correct me if I'm wrong, if you're listening out there, but I'm pretty sure it's the death penalty. That's like their abortion rights issue in Europe.
Interesting. I wonder.
You know, the Catholic Church kind of gave up on the abortion fight because like I think it was just a losing fight in Europe, but not the death penalty. And then over here, it's the reverse, where the Catholic Church is like up in arms about abortion. They're not really, they're indifferent about the death penalty here in America.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I could see that actually being a thing. Also, yeah, the fact that they blamed this film and this miniseries for the rising rates in marriage counseling and divorce also probably shows that people weren't, it wasn't as socially accepted as something people do then as it is now.
I mean, people have been divorcing. I mean, look, King Henry VIII started a new church to divorce.
You would think. I mean, there's so many behaviors that people have been doing since the BC. Dawn of,
well, not, but that's very much AD, King Henry VIII.
Of course, yeah. But like I'm saying, let's take it even further back. And yet people are still not accepting of it. You know?
Eddie,
like,
was there a biblical divorce? Do you know?
I'm not aware of. I don't understand it because remember that women and children were considered property.
That's true, yeah.
So it's property. And also, too, and we talk about Old Testament traditions, you had multiple wives.
Okay.
You know, in that case. So it's not you had just one wife that you were worried
about. Your marriage
about.
Was defined differently, yeah. I guess.
I wonder if Johan would have been cool having multiple...
I'm sure he would have.
Yeah, it's about acquiring contract. It's about property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were... Okay, interesting. Yeah, I just thought of that question just now, and I out of the three of us, you'd probably be the one who knew. And there you go. Thank you. Thank you, Eddie Z.
Thank you very much. Out of the two characters, Johan and Marianne, you know, who did you... I guess the question isn't who did you like more, who did you think was more
it's obviously
who
Marianne.
Did you relate to?
Oh, that's a loaded question because I kind of didn't relate to either of them. And that is all me. I will admit this because I was in my own personhood. I was the smart one who decided I'm not going to get in a relationship until I know who I am. And as a result, it saves me all this heartache of like wanting to figure out who I am when I'm married. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I had enough that foresight. It's like, I'll have I sow my wild oats, but I'm not going to be tied down to anyone and I'm not going to hurt anyone in the process.
Good for you.
You know? So, and I'll figure out who I am as a person. So, like, I couldn't necessarily relate to Marianne also because this, I don't know. I mean, Marianne was kind of, and this is obviously a portrayal of the woman at the time, but she was kind of just like a little bit of a doormat.
Well, some people are that. I mean, yeah, it's more common for a woman to be a little bit more submissive and to let men walk over her. That's more common. I'm not saying doesn't happen the other way around.
And probably culturally back then.
It could be a cultural thing too. And then some people are just doormats or they tend to, you know, be more that way in relationships. Yeah. So I felt for her more. And I guess in some ways I did relate to her more just because I feel like I'm not as abrasive and as... let's say inconsiderate as Johan could be. And control-ish. I mean, I'm a bit controlling, but not to that extent. So
do you want to see yourself more in Marianne and not Johan? But like, and you're making all these excuses in your head to say it's like, I know I'm clearly Marianne, but like if you ask someone else objectively, and what would you do if they said that you're Johan?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, hey, perception is everything.
Perception is everything, yeah.
I do wonder, you know. I feel like people would not say I was Johan because I also have had moments where I was a doormat.
And I'm not trying to say that you were Johan. I'm just asking
you.
No,
that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, hey, if someone were to say you seem more like a Johan to me or my experiences with you, you have been more of a Johan to me, I'd be like, okay. Like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Cry.
I can't do anything.
Just so, go to the bathroom and just weep.
Like. Maybe, yeah, right? I can't be Johan. But, I mean, perception's everything. And my perception of at least me being honest with myself, I feel more with Marianne, which is actually accurate when we get to the new one because I sympathize more with the male character.
I think that was, that was a bold choice from... our creators here at HBO.
Should we talk about the new one?
I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to say about the original. Outside of the fact that, honestly, I do appreciate the filmmaking in this, right? Like, holding of the shots and, like, just letting the performers perform. It felt more stage play-ish, which I believe this either turned into a stage play or it was based off of a stage play. Is that true? Am I making that up?
It's not based on a stage play. Ingmar Bergman wrote this.
Okay. Did they turn it into a stage play or something at any point? It felt very play-ish. Like, I could see you just having, like, a set of a house and then, like, letting it play out. Literally, like, scenes of a marriage. From a marriage.
Yeah, it might have, but, you know, not that I'm aware of.
Okay, fine. So there you go. But I appreciated it, honestly, like, the slow pacing of it a little. Which, I don't know, maybe it's just because that's just a symptom of, like, the media that I'm consuming nowadays, where it's just like, ugh, so many hectic editing choices.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Seriously, you actually appreciate the slowness of it when you go from that.
I'm actually watching right now on Netflix a show called Midnight Mass, and they give these characters monologues, right? Which is fine. The monologues are fine. The acting is fine. But why do you cut, like, to a slightly different angle in the middle of a monologue is my question. And I keep telling Eddie, he's like, Eddie, these are weird edits. Why are they doing this? Mike Flanagan, stop. Like, why? Yeah. It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Where I don't get that in this show. So it is a breath of fresh air. So
it is, definitely. And the one thing I will say is that this film had a sequel in 2003. What? I think it did have some stage adaptations, actually, now that
How do you make a sequel to Scenes from a Marriage?
And yet Ingmar Bergman did it. I mean, he had the characters, you know, we caught up with them. He's still alive?
Later.
No, he died. This was before he died, though.
Oh.
One of his last films he made.
How was it received?
Pretty good. I mean, okay. It didn't get the acclaim that it did in the 70s, because that was more his era. But it has a 91% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, with only 85 reviews.
Okay, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Before we actually talk about the new one, you said that this movie had a lot of influence on stuff. I can tell you one influence I see it a lot in.
Is it Marriage Story?
No. It's actually a movie that I've seen. What is the one? It's Ethan Hawke in that relationship.
Yeah, that's so funny you said that. The Before Midnight series.
Yes, that one. I only seen the first one, though.
Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight. Every 10 years, we catch up with the couple.
Uh-huh, that one.
Richard Linklater loves these kinds of films. He's an art house kind of aficionado, if you were to label it as such. And him and Ethan Hawke have gone on record saying that, you know, if you want to know why they made something, you should watch Scenes from a Marriage. It's pretty much what inspired them and what is like kind of like the template that they had for that trilogy.
Well, see, I didn't even know that. And there you go. It's just,
look at that. That's astute
right there. Thank you. and then obviously we said a Marriage Story, Revolutionary Road.
I mean, hey, all of the family dramas that came out from the 80s and up, I'm telling you. I mean, they were like, oh, hey, wow, we can make films about people and their relationships.
Let's make a million.
Yeah, people are ready. And now they're kind of everywhere. We're oversaturated with it. And now they're like, well, in this oversaturated market, let's go back to the original. Let's go back to the OG and remake it. Mm-hmm. But let's reverse some of those gender roles. And that's where we land with 2021 Scenes from a Marriage. This one is done by a filmmaker named Haggai Levi.
Who is he?
Yeah.
A guy.
Ayo. There's not much to say about, like, the history of this that I'm aware of. If you could shed some light, Rolando, I'd be happy to hear. But all I know is that HBO approved this about a year ago. Oscar Isaac is one of the producers of it. They were originally going to have Michelle Williams be in it. She had to back out because of scheduling conflicts.
Michelle Williams?
Mm-hmm. But that she stayed on as a producer.
Okay, that would have been interesting because, shockingly, somehow, some way, this actress from Dawson's Creek has become one of the greatest actresses of our generation.
Because she's a great actress.
Yeah, she is.
And it always feels like her movies kind of slip in.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Just like, and interesting because she also did a movie similar to this with Seth Rogen about them being like a young couple, young married couple, and how they're...
with Seth Rogen?
Yeah, I think it was Seth Rogen and how their relationship kind of falls apart.
Michelle Williams.
I'm doing the same thing.
as Seth Rogen. Take this waltz. Look at that.
Yes, look at that.
I've never even heard of this movie.
Another version of Scenes from a Marriage. Look at that.
Interesting. Look at that. Okay. Wow. Wow, what could have been? No shade to Jessica Chastain. I'm just saying, it's just like, but Michelle Williams is, now that would have.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see. I just want to know what would be a little different here, because maybe I do have some complaints a little bit about Jessica Chastain.
Oh, really?
I mean, well, let's find out.
So she stepped into the role, and their characters' names in this one are Jonathan and Mira. Very similar, Johan and Marianne. But, like we said, gender roles are kind of swamped here. So Mira's the breadwinner. Right. She's, what is she, like, executive for...
She's like a VP at, like, a company called Horizon, which I think she mentioned
like
was
an IT company.
Startup, I think is what she said.
Yeah.
Or a communications company, maybe?
So she makes the big bucks. He's a professor, so he does not make the big bucks. He's in education.
Academia, I believe, is what he kept calling you.
Yes, and he's more of the stay-at-home dad. Mm-hmm. He used to be a practicing man of his faith, of his Jewish faith, but then he left his religion, I believe.
Yeah, he was Orthodox, and
he was engaged to be married.
He was engaged to be married.
He meets her.
And then he met her. And he was in the process already of like kind of stepping
leaving
away from
his religion. Yes. Yeah. Something that we find out in the same way that we found out in the first one, in the original, which is through an interview that they do about their marriage. They have one daughter here, not two.
Yes.
And pretty much anything that Johan does in the original, Mira ends up doing in this one, because the dynamics of her being the breadwinner and kind of the more dominant personality in a way. Now they're both kind of that way, but she becomes more dominant.
They're both so mousy and it's so fucking annoying. It is like the most annoying thing, because like, I think Eddie pointed it out, but like the way Oscar Isaac's character talked to Jessica Chastain, it was very coach-like. Like he's coaching her through things, and
like
I'm just
coaching her through her feelings.
Yeah, and it's
like,
so
you really mean this. Like, I think you mean this, and when you say that, I think it's really what you're trying to express is this. So there's this lot of like taking the words from her mouth, or editing her words.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. So there was a lot of that.
And it's annoying. It was so annoying. It's such a turnoff, which is impossible for me. I feel like, how is that possible for me to be turned off by Oscar Isaacs? But here we are.
So spoiler alert, but she's
I just unloaded a lot on you. I'm sorry.
It's cool. I have the ultimate hots for Jessica Chastain. She's so hot. I am
really. She looks like Julia Roberts.
Kind of, not really.
No, oh my she has God. Certain angles when yeah. she, in the side profiles.
Yeah, I mean she's white, see, like this. But that's it.
No. I would have like rewatch it. I would have take screenshots. I'm gonna be like Julia Roberts. Julia no. Roberts. Julia
I don't see Roberts. It. I don't see it. Their facial features are just so different.
I don't know. Maybe I do have white blindness. Someone accused me of that. That was just
really
offended.
Someone accused you of that. That's
someone
great.
Has accused me of that. I'm just like, how is that? That is that a thing? Even apparently. So.
Well, I guess so. I mean, whatever. Maybe I think a white person probably said that, right?
He did. It was a white person.
There you go. But anyway, so major hots for her, but she ends up being kind of the, you know, the one who leaves, who cheats, all this stuff.
Yes.
So it's interesting, actually. Let's talk about their relationship. Did you find it believable?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. What part of it? What are you asking me? Like,
so
did I find their relationship believable?
I guess in this one, I don't know what the fuck just flew past me. Cut that out, Nick. Or Rolando. When we first meet them with the interview, in this version, because she's so clearly somewhere else and so detached, and like I would agree with Eddie, in the interview especially, he's like kind of like coaching her or being like, yeah, come on, let's like taking over that. I didn't really get a sense of their relationship. I got a sense of how bad their relationship had gotten. I felt the disconnect. I felt the lack of, you know, real presence there between the two of them. And I don't know if that's a plus or a minus. I'm still kind of thinking about it because I watched it recently, but two, uh-huh. I was like, is this a flaw or is this a pro? Because obviously this is about a failed relationship, but why should I care about a failed relationship if I can't get to see what works about it? Now, granted, same thing happened in the Swedish one, yet something about interview didn't play as disconnected as this one for me. Yeah.
I don't know.
Something, even though it's very much the same exact story. Like, they took the first episode, and that's the first episode for the American one. They took the third episode of the Swedish one. It's the second episode for the American one. The fourth is the third, right? So it's the same story. And it's amazing how, you know, a lot of people like to poo-poo on Psycho by Gus Van Sant, the remake. But it's interesting because you take the same exact story, and yet it feels like a completely different film.
Right.
And there's something about this approach, and there's another huge element that we'll talk about in a bit that makes it feel different, but there's something about this difference, maybe in time, maybe in the actual actors, that doesn't, it comes off as more detached than the original Swedish one did, for me.
I don't know if I agree with you, because in this one, the detachment from the two of them, I don't think was, maybe it's because, since I had seen, it is not, you know how I usually watch the reverse, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I watched the new one. This one, I didn't have that experience, right? Because I had already seen parts of the original one first. So maybe because I was expecting him to be the cheater, the cold one, his warmth throughout the interview is what threw me off enough to kind of think that they had like a successful marriage. That we were starting off with a successful marriage.
That's, wow, okay. That's really interesting.
And anytime that I felt that she was uncomfortable with the idea of marriage, I think she was just uncomfortable. She just seemed like just someone who was just uncomfortable talking her feelings and stuff. Like very waspy behavior. Like, waspy people don't talk openly about their feelings.
That's so interesting how we got two completely different reads from her performance. Which I don't know if that's good for her acting or not. And that's the thing too. I'm openly saying, I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing that I feel yet, but I do feel a little bit more of a detached feeling.
Do you get the detached feeling also because of all episodes start off by breaking that fourth wall and having us see like behind the scenes?
Yeah, that's the other quality that, you know, we didn't talk about that. Let's talk about now, because that's a huge, bold choice that Haggai Levi made. And apparently I read an interview with him. He made it at the last minute, and he kind of felt like it was, even though he doesn't really quite know why, it was an important element to add in there.
It wasn't.
And it wasn't. I disagree with him too.
I want to write a sternly written letter to him and be like, it's just like, you goofed here. You just did. This is weird.
The first one begins with like us, you know, watching literally Jessica Chastain, because they refer to her as Jessica. You know, walk to her mark, and then they call action, and then the whole thing begins. And then that's it. But then in the second episode, that's the only time we see like the meta, like behind the scenes, Jessica Chastain's the actress playing this role. But then the second episode begins the same way now with Oscar Isaac, right?
But he references the actual original.
And yes, I forgot about that. So there's all of this hyper-aware meta stuff that you begin every single episode with. You don't end it with it, or it never comes back throughout the episodes. We just begin it with that.
So I remember when I was watching it, I was telling Eddie, the original, for the first episode, I was just like, oh, I guess we're starting off like seeing behind the scenes of the interview. I'm like, that's interesting. We're like, this is like a big production for an interview of a couple. I'm like, I guess they're going to be famous or something in this version of scenes from a marriage. And then next thing I know, it's just like, there's no cameras in the scene. I'm just like, wait, what just happened? I was genuinely just confused.
So typically filmmakers will put stuff like this because they're trying to say something, and they want you to have a conversation with them where it's like, okay, why'd you put that there? I'm all for when filmmakers do that. It gets me thinking. I love having conversation with filmmakers. But the only reason that I could come up with when I, you know, had that kind of dialogue back and forth with the piece was that Haggai Levi wants us to be aware of the fact that this is all, you know, it's all an act. That this, the world's a stage, right? And that he wants us to know that it's not real, that it's staged. And yet the whole thing comes off as this hyper, like it wants you to think it's real. So he's actually providing us with a contrast, right? When mm-hmm. he opens it like that, he's like, hey, remember, this is a movie, right? It's pandemic era too. And we were all wearing masks, right? He dates
That's right.
it. He dates the film and he shows us, you know, so much of the mechanics of, you know, like making sure we know it's Jessica Chastain and it's Oscar Isaac and, oh, this is a remake and all this stuff. And then it goes into this, has a really strong, like, muted tone to it. It's, you know, it takes itself seriously. It really spends, it's like not too much music, not too much editing. So it's two different statements that he's saying. And not, I'm not confused by it as much as I think that what he's trying to say is contradicting his film and his miniseries, which is like, oh, hey, all the world's a stage, kind of a Shakespearean thing. I don't think it works, right? Okay, so there's this film, really quick before, I'm so sorry, I have this huge train of thought. There's this film, this is an Iranian film called Taste of Cherry that came out in 1997. And the whole film is about a man who's driving around searching for someone to help bury him after he kills himself.
Oh.
It's literally what the whole film's about. We don't leave his car. Heavy, heavy shit. At the end of the film, though, Abbas Kiarostami decides that he's going to end it with a whole cute little montage, a 3-minute montage of them making the film.
Okay. To liven, you know, a little levity.
Yeah. And a lot of people hated it because they're like, what is this meta bullshit? Why are you showing me what it was like to make this film? Now, in that case, I actually liked that ending because, yeah, liven it up. You just gave me this whole heavy thing. And it is also like, oh, at the end of the day, this is just a movie. And I just presented you with like this whole existential film. And now, hey, you know, what is even making a movie, right? Crazy bonkers, fun stuff. But this attempt at like trying to kind of tell us something like that, it doesn't even like liven anything up. It doesn't really, I think at the end of the day, it is, maybe it is confusing. I think it's just contradictory and it's just totally unnecessary. And I would have liked it better if it, the first one just began that way and then none of the other ones did.
Right. Because
at least then I would have been like, it would have been more of a complicated, like I would have had more to think about and to ponder what he was trying to say. But now I just feel like he just
thought it was cool.
Pseudo intellectual kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't.
Maybe that's too harsh. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, a little bit, but I think it's accurate. I don't know. I guess, I mean, if he's trying to make it seem like this is all just a scene, this is all far from reality, I'd be like, good. I think we need to, like, get that message across here because way to make, I think it's just like, while I think it's interesting, like, oh, the woman is a breadwinner. I think it's just feeding into that stereotype about, like, how women being the breadwinners is ruining society.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, they kind of had that inserted into the dialogue in the beginning. Not ruining society, but the magazine woman.
Implied, yeah. She's a researcher.
Researcher. She actually implied that it's better for everyone.
Right. She says that marriages where the woman is where the female or woman? The woman. I don't know. Pronouns. This is confusing sometimes. but... when the woman is the breadwinner, that those marriages are more likely to be successful, right?
Yes, yes, she says that, yes.
That's what she says. And I think, which is fine, that's great to bring up around, but like we're watching the marriage dissolve, though. So, yeah. And so I just feel like it's just like, I think it's perpetuating that idea that like, you know, women being breadwinners is kind of ultimately what's going to bring down these marriages and stuff.
That's an interesting read. And that's totally, I think that's a really valid one. My impression when I watched it was that it was just an insertion of the times we live in and that, you know, things have changed and it was, you know, showing us the difference in the era. But I could totally see why you were like, oh, wait a minute, is this the filmmaker almost giving us inadvertently a commentary?
Yeah,
on how
I mean,
it's because of this stuff. So,
I mean, I'm thinking back to when we did that movie, What Men Want,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Taraja P. Henderson, she she was, you know, this, you know, she was an executive and stuff, but like she, they still kind of turned that into like a villainous quality.
Yeah.
Because ultimately it's the happy relationship that was supposed to be the end goal, right? And so this is kind of still just feeding into that a little bit, right? Like, why can't Mira be a boss bitch and still have a happy marriage? I don't know. And which I know would dissolve the whole point of the scenes from marriage. But I think when they wrote this and they tried to do the gender role flipping, they thought, oh my God, we're finally showing something new. I guess that's true. But like, you know, I hated Marriage stories. So I don't, you're not really showing me anything new. All you're just doing is just like kind of reversing the gender roles and at a cost of something that I think more women need to see.
That's really interesting. And it's interesting because my gut reaction too is like, well, is a happy marriage, should that be a goal for everyone? But again, the film, the miniseries, is about marriage. So in a way, the importance of a happy marriage is, you know, there's a lot of weight there.
Yeah. I mean, just the idea of a happy marriage is also so heavy because, you know, I don't personally think that everyone needs to be married to be happy. I do. I'm a firm believer, though. Like, if you did get married, like, you know, you're stuck. That sounds harsh. Not that you're stuck. It's more like
make it work.
You have agreed to see this to death.
Death do
you
part?
Right, and that comes with obligations. It is hard work. And with that hard work comes also this ownership of like, it doesn't matter if you made this commitment. Mm-hmm. So if you are changing who you are, it is your responsibility to the other party to figure that out together. You know what I mean?
So you have no sympathy for Mira?
No. And I also didn't have any sympathy for Johan.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I had no sympathy. I usually don't have sympathy for the cheater. You know,
and that's a good thing. Even though people cheat, I think when people cheat, it's as much as the other person's fault because their relationship wasn't perfect. People don't just cheat because they're assholes.
Wrong. Because it doesn't matter.
Absolutely disagree with you.
Because if the other person has cheated, though, it doesn't matter.
There was a reason. There was something wrong with the relationship.
That's not an excuse, though.
No, it's not an excuse, but that's the reason. There's a difference between the reason it happened and being able to be like aware enough to be like, hey, this is the reason that this happened and I contributed to it.
Reason doesn't justify. It's just that there's an element there.
I think that's a cop-out.
No, it's not.
People are human.
Yeah. I get it, and I think
shit happens, but it's not just simply a compound. Relationships are complex, you know. You can't just blame someone and label someone as bad just because they do something. There's a reason people do it, is all I'm saying.
Right, but I guess maybe because I think the action is just it's such a selfish action that, like, I just think it's just like
people
it's just
act
like
selfishly
yeah, that's
every
great.
Day.
Many ways. I guess it's like, you know, like, okay, yeah, like the reason we broke up is because we're having communication issues. Like, all right, that's not an appropriate reaction. It's called like. Bring it up. You know what I mean?
Hey, I'm not saying people should cheat. I'm saying, though, that usually there's a reason other than I'm an asshole who wants to cheat, right? And it's I'm a selfish asshole. More than that.
And that might be true, but like here in this show, in this instance, Jonathan is not a bad guy. Like, yeah, he might be a little bit like coachy and kind of it is a little bit of turn off. And he has like,
he doesn't respect her boundaries at all.
The hair isn't working. In what sense?
He just keeps pushing her whenever she's made clear like signs that she wants to be left alone, except for this abortion scene. You know, is always in her space, always kind of walking after her, seeing what she's doing. You know,
also he's like a lovelorn puppy.
I mean, some people find that charming, but to me, it's also like, oh, dude, just give her space.
I mean, yeah, but like, so they had different love languages. You know?
Yeah. I mean, not respecting space is a big thing. What were you going to say, Eddie?
I just think it's more than just that because it just gets to the point. where she felt suffocated by him. And I think the perfect scene was when she's like ready to leave. She got her bags packed. She is walking out the door. The Uber is waiting for her. And he gives her that hug that he won't let go, that she has to rip herself off his, you know, out of his arms. And it's terribly tragic, but it's probably another example of why she's like just feeling this suffocation, this feeling of not being able to fully actualize who she is in the relationship, you know? And even, you know, like there's certain things that, you know, I don't know if I found sweet, like he packed for her, you know, he packed her bag and, but there was even, it wasn't even because he pushed her out of the way too when he did that.
Yeah.
So he's packing her bags. So she's saying, you know, stop, just stop. It's enough.
He wanted to save the wooden hangers.
But then he literally just pushes her, you know, not nicely. He pushes her. And then she gets up and she leaves.
Yeah.
You know, and then this like this neediness maybe that was evident at these last moments when he's falling apart. And all she can do is, if I don't get out of here, I'm never going to get out of here. And in some ways, that means that she's going to suffocate in this marriage. And suffocation, you know, the great element is he's asthmatic. So he is like, he's doing the whole coughing thing. And I didn't understand it at the moment, but he's doing the coughing thing, and she gets, and she looks around, and she finds his inhaler to give to him. But then she realizes this is enough. I'm done with this. I'm done with whatever this is that I'm doing. I'm just done.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that was like that moment of her like giving him the inhaler was like, oh, I'm just done.
Yeah. And then he calls her friend and is like, oh, you have to talk to her and tell her to come back. Like almost trying to be like, you have to, hey, I'm going to get somebody else involved and make her stay. You know,
that's desperate. This is all desperation.
Which is why I sympathize with him.
In the beginning, I think when we talk about like in the beginning, when we see the other episodes and now we look at the first episode in retrospect, his interpretation is their marriage is successful. Whatever that idea is they're successful. They're doing it because he's such, because of whatever he has to offer. I mean, he's like so sensitive. He's like so introspective.
He watches the kid. He
not only can understand himself, he understands her. He doesn't mind being he feels happier being the one that stays home and takes care of the kid. You know, he's saying all these things. This is, you know, and this is why the marriage, this is why this works between me and her. But then we're recognizing is that she's having this affair. Or does she have the affair at that time?
In the first one, she's not.
No. Yeah, in the first episode, she's not having an affair.
But there was this beginning of her.
I mean, she kissed
leaving, yeah.
back the other girl.
Kate, kind of, but
that's what. That is still. She still stepped out of the boundaries of the marriage.
Who, Kate or Mira? Yeah. So I think that labeling people and not understand like as selfish and all these things and not really understanding why they happen is kind of against what this whole thing is about. Because it shows that like people are complicated and people do fucked up things and stuff, but it's all for a reason. It's all of a ripple effect of relationships. Like Eddie just said, she felt suffocated. She felt like she was grasping for air, and it was like, if I don't leave, who I am is gone, right? My identity is going to just disappear almost. I have to find who I am again. That's important. Ugh. And sometimes you have to be selfish. And I'm not saying, so, hey, if you're thinking about cheating, go out and cheat. But there's a reason people do things. And the reason, though, that I sympathize with him is because she's one of those people that like to run away from her problems. And he, like Eddie said, he thought that the relationship was successful, or at least he wasn't aware of the unhappiness that she felt so profoundly in her chest that it, like, his world turned upside down. And he tried everything he could to just not, to just ignore that and to, you know, not work on it and just to get things back to their happy, ignorant place. And that's, you know, so harmful. But I find that relatable. I think that so many people do that. And it was really painful, but necessary, I also thought, to see.
I don't know. I'm kind of furious at both of you right now, to be completely honest, because, yeah, I don't know, like, I don't, yeah, I don't know, I just, I can't, like, I think she was so cold, she was just so, it was just kind of, I felt
she was
Jessica
kinda
Chastain's
cold.
Performance was so much colder than the original Johan. And I don't know if that's a sexist thing on my part, because she's the woman and, like, she's also a mother and she's just abandoning her child. And I'm just like, this is absolutely on some level despicable. Like, you kind of, and I understand that this is what the storytellers are trying to play with here, right? Like, this whole idea of, you know, does a mother owe it to her kid to be unhappy in a marriage? Like, no, I guess not. But, like, you owe it to your kid to not leave in the middle of the night and run off to Tel Aviv for like 3 months, I think.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a hard ask. I think that's a fair. I think his request is like, all right, you want to leave me? Like, let's talk it out for like a couple of weeks. All right, if you're saying you're in love with him, this is, you know, like, let's figure it out. But like, can you just not leave like in the middle of the night? Like, that would be great. That would make us happy. And I think, you know what? What a compromise. What a, that would be a joy.
That would be, but she's not Mira. That type of person. She's the type of person who, you know, shoves everything deep down inside until it comes bursting out, and then she runs away from her problems. And we even saw that in the most recent episode where she's like performing almost for him and like lying to herself so openly that he sees right through it and like something's going on with her. And that's just the type of person she is. That's how some people are, you know? And it, he kind of took a gamble when he married her.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, yeah, true. Like, but also in theory, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could just talk it out? But they were together for 10 years and she tried.
But that's also, well, she in her monologue, she was saying how like those, it was 8 months or something, right? She was like unhappy for like those 8 months. I think the implication there is like, this was kind of after the abortion, obviously. But she started feeling like this kind of feeling of suffocation and stuff. But
yeah, because she had this realization like, oh my God, I needed an abortion to save my marriage. That's so fucked up. And that is fucked up.
Which is it? And this abortion scene, not the abortion scene itself, but like the discussion that they had about the abortion. Again, here's where I thought, okay, two rational adults came to this decision. Like, I think they're putting way maybe too much thought about their feelings, because like they're in their 40s, like she's surprised, he is kind of happy, but he's also whatever, I said this about Miriam in the first one, but here he's a little bit of the doormat, right? Where he started putting his feelings aside. It's just like, well, what do you want to do, honey? Like, what are you like, let's talk about this. It's just like, okay, great, yeah, you know what, guess what, true, 2021, your body, your choice. She holds more of the cards on the table of what she wants to do with this child, not even the fetus inside of her. So I lost my train of thought here. I guess I'm just saying, it's just like, but they came to this decision as rational adults together. And yeah, there are feelings when the actual procedure happens, but I felt like it's just like, okay, but they came to this decision together. You know, and like, I know, I think deep down he wanted her to change her mind last minute and she didn't, you know, but like, that's life. I think, you know, because she mentioned that she also had trouble with the first baby, right?
She suffered from severe postpartum.
Yeah.
And severe postpartum. Okay.
I think that was like what they were hinting at.
Yeah.
I think it was a preemie. I think a premature.
Yeah, there were some complications and stuff like that. So she took some time off.
Yeah. But remind me, Rolando, what your beef is again with that?
Ooh, I don't remember now.
Oh.
My beef is that they came to this. Oh, right. The abortion. Okay. Yeah. Okay, fine. So, but like you said it like, oh, I was so, it took an abortion for me to save my marriage. But it's just like, but that's the marriage being saved here wasn't all that you were trying to save. She was also trying to save her career. She was also trying. She was making a selfish decision on her end also. Like, it wasn't just about the marriage. It's also about it was also really about her. Like, she was, you know, she felt like, I just discovered who I was, and I'm finally feeling like the old me because I'm working and blah, blah, blah,
but
blah, blah.
But isn't that important to raising children?
I don't know, because...
Being like, in a good space mentally?
You fake it in front of your kids.
They see everything. Come on, don't you know that song, Children Will Listen?
I actually do not know that song. But,
oh, really? Oh, shit. Okay, never mind.
But I don't... I think we give children too much credit sometimes,
perhaps, but like, I don't know, I think that I disagree,
like, if they're
in
fighting
that sense.
Like, there's a difference if they're like, if it's like a violent household where they're constantly fighting and bickering, like, yeah, no child wants to see that. But if she's just silently dying on the inside, it's just like, all right, well, just wait until he's 18 and then like make decisions.
Oh, so
like, like,
we
mature
know,
adults.
We know people who are silently dying in the inside, and we know how much better they would be if they actually weren't, and how much they would contribute to other relationships and factors in their life. These things are important.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, especially if you're raising a child, a human being that you are kind of molding. That's the utmost importance. So I think her decision was smart.
It's interesting because I think Kate also brings this up in the first episode about, like, you know, like her relationship with her husband, how the open marriage. Mm-hmm. And like, she's saying, like, I'm even doing for the kids, especially my daughter. She can see, you know, what kind of woman you can be. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know exactly what she said afterwards, but it's that example. Like, I don't want to live a life where my voice is always muffled by someone else, or I or someone else speaks for me, and kind of deciding I'm not doing this anymore.
Actually, now that's actually in retrospect why I think they put us with Kate, because Mira was a little judgmental towards Kate's character, but the truth is, like, you know, she said it. It's just like, yeah, but I'm putting in the work in this marriage. And these are the parameters that we have chosen to be in this marriage, not just for, you know, that's how both of them find their quote unquote happiness. Right. And, you know, they have a kid together and stuff. And this is, I guess maybe this is it, because Jonathan was willing to put in the work. Right. She ran, and like, Jonathan was ready to say, it's just like, let's talk it out. Like, I think if Mira had asked, Jonathan would have been okay having a polyamorous relationship, which I wondered if that's why they named this guy Polly, because it was like the dumbest fucking name.
It was Paula, character. Because in the original, her name's Paula.
Oh, yeah, but like, Paul.
I guess because he's Israeli. I don't know.
Like, Polly was just such
interesting. Yeah.
It's like a nickname, like Polly Ashkevitz or something. And like Polly is just like, no one would call any guy Polly. Like, that's just not
maybe
realistic.
Not in America. We don't know about other countries.
Maybe, but us Americans wouldn't call a guy Polly. I just feel like,
sure, but that's his name. We're gonna call him that name. I mean,
I don't know. Not in my company. Not when I'm running my
Fortune 500 that Rolando has way too many rules that
I know,
people need to
I
live
know.
By. He's the controlling one over here.
Yeah, totally.
Overall, though, the fact that this has created such a dialogue between us, I think, makes it a very effective piece of media. I think that there's multi-layers to it, and there's so much relatability that we have strong opinions about it, which I think is always a plus. So
I just want to point out, I have strong opinions because I actually am not a fan right now. That's harsh. It's not that I'm not a fan. I am just not. I guess I don't like movies or media that really focus on like how marriages dissolve, because I think they perpetuate this myth that like 50% of all marriages are ending in divorce, which is not true. It's just not true. It's, you know how I have beef with like true crime? This would be the next kind of media, the genre that also like I tend to not like.
That's interesting, because I don't agree with that. I think that's what a lot of the people who had controversy, who had problems with it in Sweden in 1973 thought, that it was perpetuating, you know, the divorce rates and all that stuff that were rising. I think that sometimes marriages go wrong, and that it's just showing that.
Yeah,
and
I don't think...
successful marriages don't make for good drama.
I mean, yeah, that's not true.
Okay. Maybe good for good comedy, but we're not talking about comedy. We're talking about
drama. I'm not saying that this is perpetuating divorce. It's not adding to the divorce rates, right? I'm not saying that there's a cause. What I'm saying is just like it's feeding into that myth.
I disagree as well. I'm comparing you to the Swedish, you know, people who had beef with it in the 70s, but you're not saying the same thing, so I apologize for that. But I don't agree with that. I think it's simply just showing that sometimes marriages dissolve. And it's showing what it looks like in that case. Maybe it should say scenes from a failed marriage. Maybe it's a misleading title. But, you know, also relationships are complex. And, you know, people fight. People do terrible things to one another without even wanting to.
Yeah, but we just came up with a whole list of other forms of other media in fairly recent movie history and film history and TV history that have done this. And it's just... It's
have
like
done
okay,
what?
a failing marriage story.
Oh well, like I mean, it is an oversaturated market.
Yeah, but... and I'm just saying, it's just like, and I think that oversaturation is what kind of feeds into this myth that people do have, and like I just don't think that's actually true. I actually think the opposite is true. I think like the reason people are actually holding out on getting married is because they are waiting more and more. To make sure that this is the right financial choice for me, that this is the right mental choice for me, you know what I mean? And it's just like, I don't know, marriage is a big step. And I think, while I think it's okay, I don't think there's anything wrong with us seeing like the bad sides of it because like everything has other negatives to it. I just think when we harp on this idea like, oh my God, divorce is so, like a divorce story, that's like a HBO show. You know, that's sorry, Sarah Jessica Parker and Hugh Grant, I think. I could be making that up. It's someone else. Hugh Laurie? Maybe it's Hugh Laurie. Anyway, the point is Sarah Jessica Parker getting a divorce on TV. It's a show. I'm just saying, it's just like it's like okay.
I disagree simply because I don't think art should be held responsible for real life actions. I'm not one of those people that think that it's art's fault and we should blame them for these kind of things.
Which, again, is not what I'm saying.
I kind of think, in a way, you kind of are.
Right, I'm not. I'm not saying that they're to blame for that they're causing a high rate of it. I think they're causing a miss. I think they cause. All right. Here we go.
But you don't like this property because of this reason is what you're also saying,
part of
right?
it, like on some level, yeah. They cause a misconception that ultimately affects me as not a married person, but as a gay married person, because I think a lot of Christians are looking for any excuse to take away our right for marriage, right? If it's like, look at divorce, the state of marriage in America, and now we want to give marriage to the gays? I don't know. I could be spiraling. But I'm just saying,
that's this property or any other property's fault. It's not. It's not their fault.
If they're perpetuating a myth?
I think that there's a myth out there that's perpetuated by much more. Probably by actual statistics and people's own relationships and other people's relationships. And I don't think it's art's problem. And but, I don't think we should make it art's problem.
But objectively, the statistics say otherwise.
Objectively, what do the statistics say? Show me.
19%. We're talking 19% of marriages. 22% at max. Any given year is where people of marrying age, which is like, I think they count 18 and over, are divorced.
Okay, but why is that art's problem?
It's not. I think the oversaturation is. So it's not the art that's the problem. It's the oversaturation of it that is.
Why
like,
is it the oversaturation of all of these films? Because there's so many different stories.
Because
to
they're
tell.
Not telling anything. Because that's right. There are so many different stories to tell. It's just like, so we're just harping on this one. There's nothing new.
Every relationship is different. I don't know. I actually think it's kind of successful. And I just, I don't know. I think in some way, even though you're not blatantly saying it, I feel like you are kind of using the fact that oversaturation of films like this is the reason that divorce rates are happening. And that's a reason why you don't like it. And I think that's kind of unfair. You're making it, this piece is problem, like directly, because we're talking about this today on this episode and you're using it as a reason you don't like it, you are kind of making it its problem.
Yeah. I don't see it that way. Right? I see it as, so I'm not saying that this is
objectively
causing the problem.
Right? Actually, mm-hmm. as an actual piece, miniseries, mm-hmm. you still don't enjoy it.
No, I enjoy it. I mean, objectively, I enjoy it in the sense that, like, I don't know, I like pausing at certain points and talking about this, about their actions and, like, how kind of, like, dumb they are with Eddie. As a married couple. I do. Eddie, is that not what we do when we watch this? Or we just pause it for just being like, why is she doing this? I hate you. Wow.
Eddie, Chastain. What must it be like to be married to a perfect person who never makes mistakes?
Not a perfect person, just a judgmental person.
Oh my God. So true.
Should we leave it on that note?
Do you think this was needed?
Oh, wow. I forgot we do that. I didn't think we did, but I think based on the conversation we had today, kind of, yeah, because I think that the way that, not the whole meta thing that it brings into it, the gender reversals, right? And even though we do have an oversaturated market, what did this bring to that oversaturated market that other pieces haven't done? And what did we take from it? And I do think we actually got kind of a lot from it. So I do think this was needed.
Yeah. I don't know if I needed this one. To be honest, the marriage story I wanted to see was actually Kate and Peter. That's the marriage story I wanted to see.
Yeah, they have a more interesting
Yeah, because it's a different... That is something I don't think that we've seen. Or at least that I can think of that we've seen, like, as an actual... Something that we're exploring, this kind of relationship, right? So I would have loved to have...
Yeah, I got
to
think about that, yeah.
I would have loved to have seen that, because that's giving me something new. And it's just like, and you know what? Make it a successful marriage. Really shake things up. Making
What defines a successful marriage to you?
Well, you made it to the end. One of you's died.
That's whether successful. Or not
you, that is it. I mean, it doesn't count if you killed the other person.
So if Mira stayed with Jonathan, then they would have had a successful marriage?
If they died together, or if one of them died, yes.
Wow, we're slaves to this piece of paper, huh?
Sadly, we are. Sadly, don't commit. And the same thing goes with having a child. Like, you know, don't have that child.
I mean, yeah, the child thing for sure.
If you're not ready to, like, make life decisions with your partner. Because I thought it was so selfish. I thought it was incredibly selfish when she comes in and just be like, just move to the UK with me. Like, who are you, Ross from Friends? Like, no, we're not going to move to the UK. We're not going to uproot our lives for you.
Yeah, no, that was a bit Polly. Ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. I was like, bitch, no, that's terrible. But I think divorce, you know, if people aren't happy and people make mistakes because shit happens, life happens, you'll be sitting here one day, Rolando, saying that's selfish, and then maybe you could fall in love with someone tomorrow. You never fucking know what life throws at you.
I know, I sound like such a Pollyannish person. I sound like a puritanical person with my views on marriage. It's just, but I guess maybe, because we talked about this when we talked about Cinderella, right? Like, like, I don't think marriage is just love, right? I think marriage is also hard work. Like, this is, you've made a commitment, right? Mm-hmm. And you've made it before the law. For us, we made it in front of a
But what if you put in all the hard work and you're finding that it's still not working?
But then you had to, like, look deep down and say, but did you? Because I don't think Mira did.
I mean...
Her own confession, she just like was just saying there silent. Just like, did you ever try to talk?
All right. But we have to look at these two characters three-dimensionally, okay? They're saying that they're coming from places of brokenness, mm-hmm. where they can actually... They don't feel they can be totally open with their authentic selves to anyone. So she talks about her thing when she was doing this monologue about, like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm always going to be alone no matter who I'm with, you know. And he talks about his experience when he's reading his morning pages, about his experience of having this dominant father figure that he idolized and but never felt like he, you know, never felt that he could live up to his father's expectations, and a mother who was weak and so anxious that he can never reveal his concerns about the world too. So he always closed an aspect of himself. So they enter in this marriage, even though they felt not alone with each other when they first started this relationship, but they still entered with pieces of themselves yet to be seen by each other.
So, as I said, where it's just like, but deep down, did you do everything you could to try to resolve this? It sounds to me, had they done a couple's therapy or therapy in general, maybe, just maybe, they could have then worked it out and stuff. I guess I'm just saying, it's just like, I'm not, and this, because I don't want like anyone out there who is divorced and stuff. I'm not saying that like you've made the wrong choice, right? I'm not. And I'm trying to just say, when it comes to depictions in media, they make it seem like it's such a, like it's always like this, like passionate, like this, like this like moment that should be like praised, like, oh my God, I'm doing this for me. You know, I don't know. And I think it's just like, but that's not, I don't know if that's like,
and I don't think there was anything to praise about this one at all. I think
you guys were saying it's just like she was off to look for, to find herself.
Yeah. And which is like, but that's messy and embarrassing and painful, but she had to do it. I mean, the idea of finding yourself is a beautiful idea, right? So it's always going to be a positive thing, but we saw an hour long episode of how painful this decision was for both of them. There was nothing glamorous about it. I would never want to go through that.
I mean, yeah.
So I don't think it's painting in that way and ever. I think, you know, it's like saying like, oh, you're cold, just wear a blanket. There might be a million reasons why you're cold. There might be something wrong with your body. You might have a disease. Sometimes a blanket isn't enough to keep you warm, right? Sometimes just talking about things isn't enough to save a relationship. There's so many things wrong. And I think that's how life is. You know, just because you got married doesn't ignore those things. And you can't just stay with each other if you're unhappy and all these things that you're constantly working on. They were together for 10 years. She said she tried and she tried and she tried and she just couldn't do it. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the reason I'm praising that is because she's doing it for both of them. She's doing it for her child. It's painful. It's shitty. But what's what needs to happen? Okay. I know you disagree, but
I do. I'm just trying to find, maybe I need to see a therapist and feel like, why am I so, why I would
find well, a therapist. I'm glad you
like,
said it.
I'd be like, I would be like, dear therapist, you have to watch these episodes of Marriage, Scenes from a Marriage. And then we had to talk about it. And you must tell me, why do I feel the way I feel?
First of all, I think everyone would benefit from seeing a therapist. Sometimes you can't talk to the people in your life about things that you need to get off your chest. And I am a big proponent of just having someone that you talk to. And help you see things. I think it's a beautiful thing. As am I. So yeah, maybe you should.
That's going to be the prerequisite question. Be like, did you see a Marriage Story, Scenes from a Marriage?
That like, might be, yeah.
That we could talk.
Yeah, if you've seen Marriage Story, though, I don't want to talk to you because that movie sucked.
It did.
Yeah, I don't like Noah Baumbach that much. He's not.
I don't know his work enough to.
The Squid and the Whale.
No, I never saw that.
Francis Ha, maybe. Whatever. I don't know. He's okay. Like I said, the dialogue that this is creating between us is just a lot of fun. So I think it was successful alone in that. I think strong reactions constitutes for good media.
Can we talk about the unfair glow up?
Oh, that was an unfair glow up. Jessica Chastain in episode 3, how gorgeous she looked.
I mean, she's gorgeous, period.
But the glow up that she experienced is so infuriating because it's like, why couldn't Oscar Isaacs get a little of a glow up also?
I know, me and Rolando were like, as it was happening, you know, when she was that morning and she's walking away, me and Rolando was talking about, well, all you got to do is get a gym membership, get a little bulky, you know, maybe get a stylist for that hair.
Yeah.
You know, get some contacts, you know, get himself out there.
Yeah.
But he did nothing. He did nothing. Yeah, he got a better fitting marigold shirt,
which I hated
thing.
On him.
I liked it.
Well, he stopped having asthma attacks, and he seems that he's in a better space emotionally. So I hope that's his glow up.
Yeah,
I guess, I say, but we can't see that.
Bouncing back from a breakup with, you know, a whole image makeover is definitely the best thing that anyone could do for their mental health.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no.
I'm here to tell you,
revenge bodies are a real thing.
Oh yeah, yeah they are.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's so we talked for an hour and a half about this. I didn't think we'd be talking this long.
I know that I have very strong opinions on the depiction of divorces on television.
Yes, you do. And I love it. That's, you know, why we have a podcast, because we have
strong opinions.
Technically,
they haven't gotten divorced.
That's true. She doesn't want one, surprisingly.
She had a slide back, and I'm just like, and here's where I'm just like ready to say, it's just like, just get the divorce already, because, ugh.
Yeah, you ran for the hills, and yet you're not okay with, like, him redoing the house the way he did. Like, make up your mind. All right. Well, gee. Did you watch this? Did this conversation we have make you want to watch this? God, I hope I did. Please share your thoughts on marriage and divorce and all of that with us. Email us at remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. Instagram at remakesrebootsrevivals. We're also on YouTube. You can search for us, remakesrebootsrevivals. Twitter at remakespodcast. And if you just want to actually talk to us, you have so much to say that you want to use your voice, please call us. You could call us at our phone number, which is, Rolando?
862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and share it with your friends. These things help, and we love hearing from you guys. So, yeah. All right.
That's it. I want a divorce, Nicole.
And little did everyone know, this is the last episode. This was our ugly breakup.
This is what.
Imagine. But yeah, this was a riot. I really enjoyed it. And looking forward to next week when we return to HBO for The Many Saints of Newark.
What? Oh, that's right. Spoiler. Yeah.
Spoiler. Well, we want you to return, so come join us for that in New Jersey. I wonder where this one took place, actually. Whatever.
Oh, I think it was like, I think it was New York Metro. I think it was like Greenwich.
Be. Yeah.
I thought it was like Greenwich or something, like Connecticut.
Yeah, I did think Connecticut. I got Connecticut vibes too. So, all right. Well, until next time,
stay unoriginal.